Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. My name is Bela, and I will be your host for our weekly Global Awaken call. Today, our special guest speaker is none other than Zhang Deng. And Zhang, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. Please bear with me. She is someone who really embodies today's theme of development with local resources. Here's how the call works. In a few minutes, our moderator, Xiao Xu, will engage in a deep dialogue with our speaker. And by the top of the hour, we'll roll into a Q&A and circle of sharing, where we will invite all of your reflections and questions. So this week's theme, as I shared earlier, is development with local resources. We traditionally think of uplifting impoverished communities with financial resources. But if we broaden our resource bank to multiple forms of capital, like time, experience, culture, the possibilities look very different. If we held a community problem strictly with the constraints of local design, local resources, and local manpower, what kind of solutions could emerge? Since we have the pleasure of a remarkable moderator today, Xiao, I thought we could start by asking her to kick off our circle.
Thank you, Bella, for your kind introduction. And today, I'm very excited to be moderating this phone call. And considering Zhang and I have similar region, humble origins from either China or Vietnam, then came to America for graduate school. Then Zhang went back to Vietnam, and a year later, she discovered the amazing path for herself to serve the community. And I'm still staying behind in America, still trying to figure out what I should do with my life. So I really resonate with today's theme. I see myself in the future to work in China, and China and Vietnam have a lot in common in that people are really strive, still in the phase of striving to make a good living, try to survive. And we have to deal with a lot of environmental issues, economic issues in many areas in our in China and Vietnam. So I really admire Zhang's effort to really go back and to do the magic. I would love to introduce Zhang, as Bella has already introduced. So how are you, Zhang, today?
Me? I am happy. It happened that I'm also at a retreat, meditation retreat in a national park this weekend. So I just feel wonderful.
Wow. I'm very happy that you are taking time for yourself, and it must be a long day for you. So the first question I have would be, what gets you up every day to do what you do?
What wakes me up every day to do what I am doing? I think it's the every day I wake up because of the sun come into the window, and I live on the riverbank. So, yeah, I look forward to get out of bed and see the world. And next would be I am every day feeling I am at the place where I want to be, doing exactly what I want to be, being with the people who I want to be with. So it's just the sense of celebration, the sense of, yeah, a new day begins.
Wow. I love the image you painted for us. The river, the sunlight, that gives us a lot of hope that every day is a new day. So I'm curious to know how you became who you are today. Like, were you just born a happy child? And were there any turning points in your life that have changed you?
I think my journey, my journey started a long time ago. So when I was a young girl, I was very curious and interested in the world around me. And I went to college to study foreign language with the hope to travel outside the country. And the time I got out of college is the exact time when my country was transforming and, you know, moving from being very isolated country, joining ASEAN and joining the world, and the U.S. lifted the embargo against Vietnam. So all of that happened when I was graduate in college, and it just basically within the window of 1 or 2 years, many things that were not possible for decades became possible. But I'd say that remarked me as a young person full of hope and full of energy. At the same time, things changed in my country very, very fast. So I only within a few years, moving from the energetic and optimistic young person into quite cynical adults, looking around and see, well, you know, we are getting rich, but it might not be something we want. So quite quickly, around 2002, when I came back from U.S., I graduated from college in 95. I went to U.S. in 2000. I came back home in 2002. So you can see that from 2005, I got out of college and full of hope. 7 years after coming back from the U.S., I already felt that, you know, it's overwhelming. The change is incomprehensible and there's so many negative consequences. So those are a few milestones that mark my journey being naturally happy and optimistic into being very concerned and moving to the other directions of part of the spectrum of, you know, too concerned, too judgmental, wanting to do too much and feel impossible. I, at that time, when I came back from U.S., I shared with Xiao before that I had a time of feeling really down and couldn't connect with the people around me, because I think things change too fast and I want to improve things. So that's briefly some of my journey.
Yeah, so and then what happened?
Okay, so after that part of, you know, came back home and feeling that the Vietnam or the Hanoi, the city that I was born and the place that I know become a different place, I was kind of feeling really sad and wanted to do something too much, but couldn't find a way to do it. And the main impact is I cannot connect or communicate with my friends, my family. And I started taking meditation. So I meditate with a group of friends. Through meditation, I really calmed down and being in touch with myself and seeing where the sadness come from, and also could see the suffering or the challenges that my friends and my family and the rest of society are facing. So they themselves are struggling too. So it helped me to be more compassionate, more understanding, and key thing is no longer judgmental.
Wow. And so in the service space community, many of us adopt that meditation is internal service, while service is external meditation. And you are such a vital example for that. So do you think meditation plays an important part in your activism work?
Yes.
I want to hear more in the daily work and how that plays out.
So that, you know, when I founded Action for the City in 2006, we had a mindfulness practice in the office in the middle of a really, really noisy, crowded and, you know, bustling city. So we invite people to come and have a lunch in silence as a circle. At the time, I was challenged by others who say that it's impossible to bring meditation to the workplace. It's not the norm and it seems strange and it's not practically important, like possible. So I thought, okay, let's bring it as a lunch invitation. So we make a circle, we eat in silence, we kind of meditation while eating, and after eating, we also sit in silence in circle. Then we start sharing after we finish. So that was more like an invitation, and it worked. So people start coming, and our workplace start practicing mindfulness lunch since then. So that was back in Hanoi, and about 5 years ago, I moved to Hoi An, which is a very small city in the central part of Vietnam, one of the few places where we are still keeping our traditional architecture and some of our traditional lifestyles. It was recognized as UNESCO as a World Cultural Heritage Site. So in Hoi An, it gave me an insight that not only we do meditation for an hour a day for lunchtime, meditation can be our own day, and yeah, own day, or every time we bicycle to the old town to work, we work in the garden, we work. So each of those moments can be a meditative moment and contemplative moment.
Wow. That's very inspiring to hear. And I just feel like I want to be there with you doing that work. So it seems like I remember watching the TEDx talk you did in 2011 in Stockholm, and you said you started your project just by going to the poorest area in town, and you started organizing or being one of the women who started organic garden to completely transform the place. It seems like it reminds me of one of Lao Tzu said, the Chinese philosopher. The supreme good is like water, always goes where the lowest point where people disdain. So you always pick the area that the poorest people, the most disadvantaged areas to serve. And now you move to Hoi An, another traditional city, and it just reminds me of that. And so I want to know, have you ever hit a very low point facing great changes, and how did you come back?
So the low point was after working in Hanoi for about 5 years, I got burned out too. I felt like that we are working against a big stone wall. Our organizing efforts in poor part of the city in disadvantaged areas are often challenged by the really harsh local authorities, especially with some business interests. For example, the abandoned land to be turned into a park somebody else want to use that as a parking area and for their cars. So our effort to turn into a park is met with huge resistance. So we have victories. We have some small victories, but at the same time, I found for every small park, we've saved. And we were able to protect. There were 10 others that were taken by mostly by business interests. So that just given perspective of, I feel like I need to make a distance from what's going on and just reflect on why is it, is this the right way to do the work? And the key thing is, it's not good to burn out. So I feel if I'm not happy, that's not a good sign. So I decided to leave Hanoi and go to Hoi An just to regain the insight. Again, the insight to have a perspective into what's going on, and very importantly, for self-care. I need to care for myself.
Wow. Yeah. I can imagine how challenging that will be, because whenever I go back to China for a visit, I feel overwhelmed by the noises of construction and the pollution, and most people are still so stuck into the economic strive to have more cars, even though they complain about the air pollution. So there's a lot of contradiction. In what I see, especially when I even visit my own family in China. So I totally resonate with what you say, that how challenging that could be. I know you participated in Global Wellbeing Lab, so you are very familiar with the theory U. And on the website, I just read, the success of our actions as change makers does not depend on what we do or how we do it, but on the inner place from which we operate, inner place. That just struck me so strongly. I think that you really focus on your inner place to continue your activism work. Mm. So my other question is, you have created a lot of grassroots change in your community, mostly without money. You just go there and do it. Can you give us some examples of how this has worked out?
Yeah.
Did you just do it and then money follows? How did you work with money?
Yeah, so the example that I share on TEDx in Stockholm a few years ago was about working with really poor community of migrants in Hanoi. And so what happened was that in that community, there's a huge, huge area of unused land because the land used to be flooded part of the year, but with, in recent years, it no longer flooded. So the land is just sit there and not used. And instead, it became a place where people give garbage and trash and really undesirable place. So there's an irony that in a really crowded city, here these people have this big piece of land that cannot be used, and instead is really polluted right in the neighborhood. So when we came and expressed interest in engaging with communities, then the local authority asked, the first question they asked is, do you have money? This is going to be expensive project. It will cost a lot of money to clean up this place before you think of doing it anything. And they quoted something like hundreds of thousands of dollars to clean the place. It is quite a huge place, about 30 hectares. And this is a Vietnamese, I'm not sure how convert into US, but it's a huge area. And so we don't have money. Certainly we don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars. And to them, that's the end, to the authorities, that, oh, so you don't have the money, then you have no business in this community. But to us, it's the beginning. Because I am not taking no for an answer. It's more my side. When people say no, it gives me even extra motivation of why. Why no? It is money. It shouldn't, and it will not, happen. The project should not and will not be stopped because lack of money. It just, yeah, I remember vividly the feeling I got when I heard the word money, and so we basically in our office we talked to each other and we decided that, we don't want to give up that project, and what we can do is the first simple step that we can do is be friends with people in the community. So for 6 months and more, our, team, we divided and, into different team, and we just came to the community, spend time talking to people, making friends, and learning about the community. So no longer talking about project or any some anything official, and we became friends. So we met some of the community leaders who are not part of the local government, but who are respected by local people. And from them, then we heard, we talked, and we find out that those are people actually interested in cleaning up and making the land useful again. And together, we agree that the women's group is the first, group to do it. And then it started out by the most simple thing is to do composting. And so we start just doing composting with groups of few women. And once they have good composting from organic waste from the kitchen, then they start thinking about where to use that composting. And naturally, the abandoned land is a good place to start. So we start cleaning up together a small piece of land. But it's what happened after that was just, I think, is a miracle. It's something that, I never expect or could never even dream of. It just, once a group of women started a small garden, others start coming out and follow. So first group comes second group, comes third group. And I didn't know it before, but actually the women, the migrant women who are in the city, really love farming. That's what they do in their village, back in the village. And the life in the city was so harsh. So gardening is a form of therapy for them. And they took a lot of pride in doing that. So it was something very organic happened. It was not planned. And the huge area of land were turned, abandoned land turned into community garden. And that project cost zero. It doesn't really cost anything. And beyond that, people started wanting to make a small road to access the garden. And they make a small playground for kids in the neighborhood. So those kind of things happened one after another. And it, looking back, I think it was the moment we thought, no, we're not going to give up. We're going to work in this community. And together we decided that we just spend time being friends, getting to know people. That was quite the key point.
Wow, that's like a miracle. Because I know many people in organizations, they feel we don't have enough financial resources to start any social change projects. You just said a perfect example for them. We just start from small steps and to make friends within the community, and the magic will happen. It's like once we start doing that, things just start flowing organically around us. It is a miracle. And thank you for sharing that. It kind of sounds like a gift economy when we don't put a price tag on what we serve or share, just trusting the system to ripple, to have faith in what goes around, comes around by paying it forward. Thank you. And so I would like to, when you say that you feel the, my question is, do you ever feel like urgency because you see so much work needs to be done? So because recently there was a 9-year-old wise man shared a conversation with his mother about time. So I want to share that with you. So he had a conversation with his mother about why is humanity like this? What if there was no such thing as time? And his mother asks, if there was no time, what would the world be like? After some silence, the 9-year-old says, we would have lots of new friends. I couldn't call Liam or Oliver and say, I'll meet you at the San Pablo Park at 10. I would just go to San Pablo Park and play with whoever was there. We would just do what was happening when it was happening. And that's so resonant with what you have just shared with us. My next question is, you used to work for a multinational nonprofit organization. So what made you walk away from that world and found your own organization, Action for the City? I would like to know more about how you founded it and what Action for the City really do over the years.
Yes. So I did work for a number of years for really several international organizations, non-governmental organizations in Vietnam and for some time outside of Vietnam. What I saw from that experience was that, you know, the big project, especially the big project, became so rigid, and it is a system, it is almost like a government system by itself. So you talk about the non-governmental you know, organizations bringing the voice of the marginalized and you know, a different way of doing things, but I found that it actually quite bureaucratic. It kills creativity and flexibility, and it's so much about finishing deadlines and outputs and outcomes. So it just, you know, it doesn't work with the kind of a dream or hope that I have for engaging or working with a community. I just don't think that working with community is ending up spending 70 or 90% of my time sitting in front of a computer and just tracking reports and, you know, doing things that's so distant from what's going on. So that's the first part that I fear, that is, no, it's not my place. So one, yeah, so it's a bureaucracy, the paperwork, the rigid structure. And I also very critical of the tendency that, you know, funding create dependency on the part of the community, mostly of how it is spent, how the project got introduced to the community. And because I was a manager and quite high up, I was not every day in the village or in the community meeting. And the more distant I in my position push me to, the more dissatisfied I feel. And I, even to this day, I still think that any managers or anyone, you know, in a senior staff in any development organization, most of their time should be with people, and only a certain percentage in the office.
Wow. I just hope so many nonprofit organizations or NGOs are going to hear that. Just get away from the screens more and be with the people more. So Action for the City is doing lots of projects. Like, I'm so amazed, like, how, like, you do youth training programs to get them familiar with the organic agriculture, and you work with schools to educate students to live more in a green way, a greener way. You work for public space, food safety, just to name a few. I just feel like where did you find that? Like, you are so creative, like, you just, so many ideas and projects that come to you, and I would like to know how Action for the City works and how you integrate so many creativity into your work.
Yeah, one thing is that, you know, as a team, we often have a team meeting and to look at what are the issues that are out there. But also, not only the issue out there, but something that's very close to our heart, something that we feel that's so important to us personally. And of course, there's many things, many, many things that, many issues that need work on you name it, in any big city. And but we found that food, you know, urban organic garden is something that bring people together, and the public space, the playground, there's something to bring us together. So it's in our slogan of the organization, it's all about bringing people together. You feel it's not just addressing the issue, but how we address it, the issues in the city. And the best way is to do it with others, to share our concerns, share our innovations, and to invite them to be part of our team and a part of our work. So that would start out by, you know, things that we close to our heart and things that we can bring in people, you know, together to make a garden, together to build a low-cost playground in a community center. Those are the things that really bring people together, and everybody feels part of it. They can contribute something. So that's really important for us as Action for the City to both look for things that are important to us personally, and then things that we can then invite others outside of our organization to join us. And that's why our project is kind of, you know, just we basically feel like we send out invitation to people, hey, here's something that you can join. And the more people join, the more project happens.
Wow. Community. So, like, because I was on a training course, online training course, and they talk about how people don't get along within the among activists, among different nonprofit organizations, even though a lot of us share the same goal. We want to protect the planet, work with the community, but when we really work with each other, there are conflicts within the community. So have you ever faced that inner conflict in the community, and how did you deal with it?
Yes, we did. We did have faced some situations where there is actually competitions among different organizations instead of collaboration. And what we did is, for one, I think we kind of foresee it. We know that that's something going to happen given the kind of, you know, competition for funding and the way the some of the funding is set up. The funding the system is set up is obviously will create competition among groups. So first, we are aware of the situation. Number two is, with that awareness, we have very clear policy that no, we're not accepting that term. We are not accepting the term of competing with other organizations for the resource. We just don't. So either if we can change the rule of the game, we join. If we cannot change the rule of the game, we're just not going to apply for that kind of funding as an organization. And the that will come with our policy. And the third one is, we communicate what we think to other organizations. We do see that, you know, it's almost like a Buddhist concept of non-ego. So you apply that non-ego concept to individual, but you can also apply that to entire organization. Your organization shouldn't have an ego. It's all about the ecosystem in which you work together. It's not about whether your organization get this funding or not. So those are some of the messages we've been communicating with others, and the result is that we became good friends, and really good friends with some like-minded organizations. And at the same time, we obviously choose not to work with some others is simply because they don't share the same values. But those who share the same values then became really good organizational friends. And that also one way to why we can become so, creative in funding is that we have good friends who are different organizations. So in terms of if we don't have project funding, and we share, different organizations share the work with each other.
Wow, that's such a valuable message for us today, because people talk about the urgency of the climate change, but a lot of us still don't get along. That really saddens us. So thank you for that inspiring message. And I also want to read, I'm reading the book Soulcraft by Bill Plotkin. It says, it is a place defined not by the deeds she performs, but by the qualities of soul she embodies, not by her physical, social, or economic achievements, but by the true character she manifests, neither by her capacity to conform to the masses, nor by her ability to creatively rebel against the mainstream, but by the unique way she performs her giveaway for her community. And I feel you are contributing to the community in your unique way for the community as part of the community, which could inspire so many of us to work together as a community globally. My relatives in China would say to me sometimes, if there are protests in the street, don't join them, because they are still very traditionally thinking making good money and raising a family should be my main focuses. So when I go back to China, I have a hard time explaining to them that I'm actually weaving my second cocoon now. Just be patient with me. Give me a little bit more time, because one day I will become a butterfly. My process is slow. And so I want to know, do you have any family pressure? Like, how does your family support you to be who you are and support your mission in life? Do they understand you?
It's very interesting that you ask that. And actually, I have a very funny saying from my dad, who's my very good friend, and I share with him a lot of, my thinking and where I am at and why I think certain way. He's my good friend. And after I share with him my journey back, before I started Action with the City, I told him that I had this, really strong calling. I wanted to do it. And his answer is, okay, go work for the World Bank for a few years to be financially secure, then go on what you want to do. So it's funny, my dad, see both sides. He wanted to support me. He wanted to support me to follow my dream, my true calling. On the other hand, he has a rational and practical solution. Still go and work for, someone who pays you a lot. Then you will have some stability and some good saving. Then you can do what you want. So that's I remember, and I love my dad, but it's looking back, it was really funny. Of course, I didn't listen to him. For me, when I heard a calling, I just follow. I stop. If I hear a calling, I feel this is good, this is important, this is the right thing to do, I just want to drop other things to do. It's one of my quality. Yeah. Like, I would not for one more day accept the kind of work that I found that no longer valid.
Wow. So at the dinner table, do you still visit them often? Do you live with them? Visit them often, close?
Actually, my dad was visiting my family right now when I am at this national park for this retreat. So he is spending time with my husband and my kids. So we see each other, and my dad worked for the government, used to work, now he retired. So we have different views. On the other hand, he's open enough to listen and to be willing to explore my views and my outlook.
Wow. So he's changing, so that's great. I know you have been reading Daily Good, one of service-based Daily Good News, for 4 years. How has it affected you?
I'm happier person, I think, as a result. I think the media, it in general, is so I think negative. It's negative. It just catch our attention in a negative way, and daily good offer the opposite. It bring us something good. I mean, something that the best of, I think, of humankind, some of the good initiatives, of the best practices out there, and every day you receive a gift from Daily Good. So I just love it, and I have this program with young people where I share with them. So many of them do not speak English. So what I read, Daily Good, then I share with the student in Vietnamese. And it's just like multiple my joy. The first joy is reading it myself. Yeah, so knowing some people are doing really wonderful, awesome work out there. And the second is being able to tell that news to others and sharing with others. So I have lots of positive and, yeah, just good feeling out reading it and sharing it.
So how did you know, are you familiar with Service Space? How did you know this community?
So I met Nipun Mehta at the Global Lab, Wellbeing Lab, the initiative that you mentioned earlier, and that's where I met him. So I'm like, oh, this is the man who came out from that. I never thought, I just said, wow, he's him. So it's like, you know, I couldn't believe that it's him, because when I was reading Daily Good, and you know, I mostly with Daily Good, I know a bit about Service Space, but Daily Good is like my daily friend. Yeah, so I always thought, ooh, who think of this? Who created this? And then first time in Berlin, someone told me it's Dipun and his team, and I'm just amazed, totally amazed. And it was such a wonderful thing. It's like, yeah, it feel like, yeah, it's just another wonder of the world. You know, the man who, who did it, and I can see him. I can meet him in person.
Yes, and I think we, many of us are lucky that we live in the same area as he does. He has been a great inspiration for so many, many of us. What kind of advice would you give future activists or for people, for the young students who came to the U.S., for example, and then they want to go back to Vietnam or, you know, other countries, go back home to see all the problems they want to change? So what kind of advice would you give them?
So the advice, start with a small step and don't give up. And a second piece of advice is, in order to care for others, to transform the world, we really need to have self-care, to care for ourselves, and really look deeply into ourselves and see, you know, our feelings, that are our needs, and have sufficient attention to ourselves. This is a long, long journey, and we want to make that, even the journey to sometimes fight solution, fight pollution, maybe the journey to fight urban poverty, it can be a difficult journey, but we need to feel joy and happiness in our hearts, and we act out of compassion. And that's how we go out and change. We act from the place of compassion to all, to everyone, even the business leaders sometimes who do things that we think hurt the public interest. But the place where the inner place from which we go out and act should be the place of compassion.
If you want to give them like one sentence, what would you say?
One sentence?
I'm just giving you a
Yeah, yeah. So start with a small step and don't give up. Yeah, that would be my one sentence.
Do you believe in magic?
Magic. Believe in, I think so. I think if I see magic is something that happened that doesn't follow the ordinary or conventional way of doing things. Sometimes some, I don't know, magic or miracle that happens when we really want something. It happens.
It happened. So I have been very inspired by today's conversation with you. For me, I feel like I'm readier to go back to China one day just to start with small steps instead of feeling overwhelmed and trying to talk to people locally, try to connect with them. That's the biggest lesson. Because I feel I'm so closed down, even when with my own family, when they disagree with me or I don't think I can convince them, I close down. I don't want to talk to them. And then just the conversation is ended. So I think from now on, I'm going to, for my personal journey, I would change how to continue to open up, to face disagreements and continue to have a compassion for them, to understand my family and the people in China, why they are who they are in that phase, how to work together. I really appreciate what you have shared today. I want to know what else you would like to share, because you told me more about very inspiring messages, and I want to hear what you would like to share more.
And sorry, Xiao, this is a really beautiful conversation. I just wanted to take this opportunity to invite our callers to also join the conversation with any reflections that have come up or any questions you might have. Please press *6 if you have a question. Or if you're not on the phone, you can just email us at askask@servicespace.org. Go ahead, Xiao.
Thank you, Bella. And John, would you like to share more about other messages you want to share with the world?
It's another message I like to share besides start small and don't give up, and also for activists to take care of ourselves, and that's where we can have a long journey to serve the world. Another message is about possible. Yeah, I don't know, but I just feel things are possible. Yes, we can. If we want to do something, we can do it. Say, for example, people might want to tell me it's impossible to change the traffic jams in Vietnam because it's simply, it's so chaotic, and we have 8 million people in a place where there's hardly any public transport, and traffic jam is just part of it, So people telling me that, they say, oh, it's impossible to have parks because the land is so expensive and the city is not grand planned for and business interest is so high. You're not going to be able to do a park. When I hear those messages, I do not let them discourage me. I used to. In earlier years, I used to let those messages discourage me, but I no longer allow that to happen. I think once we have enough strength within us, then our focus shifts, my focus shifts from on the why it's not going to work into, yes, this is how it's going to work. But, you know, having said that, it doesn't mean that, you know, it's true that it would take years to stop this traffic jam and terrible transport system in big city in Vietnam. It's true, but it's not impossible. It's true that it's a journey. It's true that it will take a lot of effort, but I do not let the impossibility attitude to affect what we can do. So again, it comes back to the message of, you know, small step. If we take the small step of having people, you know, joining and offer alternatives such as bicycle, such as in a certain neighborhood, people operate sharing of the vehicle. Those are possible initiatives, and focus our energy there. What possible? What we can do? So that's my other sharing that I think that worked really well for me.
Shao, I actually have a question. If I could jump in.
Yeah, please.
Great, thank you. I was just looking at the website for Action for the City and reading more about some of the beautiful projects that the communities are doing together. And I saw the Green School, and it's pretty new, it looks like, but you're working with really young kids in grades 1 and 2 to participate in lessons that focus on garbage, plants, energy. And I just love to know a little bit more about what that's been like. How are young people, responding to this program and engaging with it? What is it like to work with, kids that are in first and second grade around these topics?
It's just joy to work with them. It's just a joy. Basically, you know, the school system is boring, and especially in my country, the school system is very boring. I am sorry to say. So the opportunity to come to the school and, you know, just to work with kids and to do something that not focusing on academic achievement, not focusing on, you know, you be better than others competition, to be better, to get to better school. The Green Living Program is really a place where we invite kids to come together and look at our surrounding and look at their lives, look at their school, their home, and what they can do in small way, in big ways, to help the environment and to improve to make the earth a better place. So basically, it's just joy to come in school and to be able to talk to kids. And the program is all not about teaching them what they can do, but it's about a discovery together, co-discovery. It's very, it's highly flexible. It's not like you have to do ABC to save electricity or save water. It's about, hey, we want to save water. We want to save electricity, and, you know, what can we do? And, you know, each one would come up with his or her own little solutions and do some auditing at home and come back with a list of action to do, and then share that list of action, and the other gets new idea. So it's more like a spontaneous process rather than something very structured. It just makes us as a, activists working with kids feel happy ourselves, and just make it really enjoyable for the kids. The, you know, the part about, okay, start recycling, sorting out your trash, those things, if communicate in a way that's not fun, can be seen, oh, these environmentalist people, oh, more of this, more of that. But it can be communicate in a way that creates, you know, joy, and it seems fun to people to join.
Wow, I love that, what you said, that it's not about educating these kids about all of these issues, but it's about being in discovery together. That just sounds like such a beautiful way to create change in the world and engage kids at that age. Thank you for sharing that and doing this work. We have another caller in the queue. I'll go to REA now.
Hi, Zhang. This is REA in Half Moon Bay, California. Very inspiring to me to listen to how you and your work are really living the values that we in the service-based community aspire to. I'm curious about how your work is viewed by government authorities where you are in Vietnam, either local or regional or national. How do people in those positions view what you're doing, and has that ever presented a challenge? And if so, how do you deal with that?
Thank you for your question. The answer is basically the national government do not pay attention to us. We are too small for them.
Uh-huh.
And it's also our strategy of, you know, it's not about us as an organization, but it's about the message you want to give. And that message is shared by different like-minded organizations. So number one is we are not like have a big public profile. Having said that, we are known in some area to some people, but not at the national level. And in the cities, different cities where we work, the different reaction from local governments. In the positive case, like in the case of Hội An, we have support from local government. So local governments in Hội An see us as their allies. They see that, you know, that we can do things that they can't do. We can be, we can be in the community. We bring the voice and we understand the needs of the community. We can create dialogue in the community the way as government official they can't. So in that town, we are welcome. On the other hand, in Hanoi, the capital of Vietnam, we are really not welcome at all. We try to have the movement to save the parks and from, you know, turning the parks into commercial center and or turning the parks into car parking areas of the very few park left in that crowded city. And we were seen as a threat to them. So in that case, our reaction was that we diversify the different stakeholder in our campaign, in our park campaign. So the government doesn't like us and we are seen as an activist. However, there were other respected scientists or people who can speak up and get the attention from the government. So we were able to bring those voices that doesn't seem threatening to the government on the case of saving the park. And our role become, we move into the backstage of supporting these different network and different individuals to bring out the voice and to stop the taking over public land and public space. Yeah, so we have different situation happening in different cases, and in each case we find a different solution.
That's very interesting how you describe what you do in Vietnam of stepping back and connecting with others and encouraging others to act. Very interesting. Thank you very much. While I'm here, Bella, if it's okay, my wife Wendy also has a question.
Yeah, of course. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you so much for this conversation, this very inspiring conversation. And so what was occurring to me as I've been listening, and this is kind of a half comment, half question, and I'll try to articulate it, is this kind of work, this service work, does have a lot of challenges. And oftentimes, you know, we're up against various agencies or even families or friends who don't understand what we're doing. And it occurs to me, you had been mentioning self-care as one piece of keeping your energy going and keeping the inspiration going. And it occurred to me that another piece is, like for those of us in service space or other communities, is how important it is that we support each other as we're going through the various challenges in terms of being compassionate or, you know, making the world a better place, that we really need to be buddies for each other in terms of continuing to do this work. And is that something that you're finding with the groups that you're working with, that there's a lot of mutual support, and how does that manifest?
Yes, exactly. I think I absolutely agree with you about being buddies with each other and mutual support. And as I shared before, in the case of, you know, how different organizations not becoming competitors but collaborators and helping each other, one of the things that really worked for us is, you know, we have organizations that are really, we call, close friends. So as human beings, organizations can be close friends to each other. We develop understanding. We have our team members work together on different projects. We share with each other. We support each other with new know-how, new inputs, at the same time sharing resources. So it's like a human being friendship takes time, and for organizational friendship as well. And yes, we definitely have the that kind of ecosystem where we are from. We have really good friends, organizational friends, friendship with different organizations, and it allows us, coming back earlier to your husband's question of sometimes, you know, we step back and let others be in the leading roles depending on the situation. And also having good buddies and organizations out there not only help us to feel connected or strong, but actually provide a lot of practical support, sharing staff, joining some work to do together. So actually it has a practical implication of this kind of real long-term partnership. Like, we are really together in this. So we have a number of organizations like that.
Thank you.
I also have another question about, and it's more of it's partly comment, partly question, similar to Wendy. I'm just curious to learn more about the impact, how women are perceived in Vietnamese culture, and the role of women in community, and how, you know, your approach to development in particular is working with women, perhaps working to empower them. Maybe they're already empowered. I'm not sure. But can you just talk a little bit more about that?
Thank you for your question. In Vietnam, in most community where we work with, women have the invisible power. But in the public sphere, they are not. In the public sphere, it's the man who would attend meetings, who make decisions. But it's the woman who really run things. And so they have that. They almost like, okay, we don't need, you know, to be counted for our effort and power, as long as you leave us, you know, alone to run to run family and run communities. So that's how I see Vietnamese women. They have that power and they don't care that power is being recognized publicly. However, in reality, there is still a lot of, gender issues. In particular, violence against women associated with alcoholism and discrimination against girls. So these still exist. And talking about how we work with community on such issue, first of all, we do not make it a big deal. So unlike other organizations, we do not start coming to the community and say, hey, this needs to be changed. The woman needs to go to the meeting, and no mom, man cannot, or something like that. What we did is actually first, you know, invite a woman to the meeting, but not making a big deal out of it. For example, in the organic garden project, it's the man who also want to, you know, be part of it. And so we accept the, not accept, but like in a gentle way. We don't want to come as a whole, totally confrontational. And instead, invite, encourage women to come. And the interesting thing is, once the space is created for women, the women stick around and be interested. While the men, actually, you know, not all, but some of them are not interested in gardening, not interested in creating a playground for kids. So over time, they drop out, some of the men. Why the woman who first came and not as a leader, just, you know, as a participant in the program, she and her friends became more and more interested, contribute great ideas, and natural people listen to them, and they become the leaders of the initiatives. So in several cases, we found that, you know, creating the space, the condition in which the woman can, you know, demonstrate the ability, the capacity, and that's a really good demonstration of what they can do. And I think in this case, the men have to give up, you know, because it's become obvious that they are really, they should be out of the way. Let the woman do it. Yeah, so those are the, some of our, we do not, so basically we do not like try to emphasize the conflict, instead create the space and the activity in which women can demonstrate and their, you know, wonderful talent.
And have you seen that shift some of the dynamics in communities over time, maybe in subtle ways or maybe in more significant ways?
Over time, yes. It's not easy immediately.
Yeah.
But over time, yes. It, I can see one of the clearly the impact is to give the confidence to the young woman. So the young woman seeing this example of this older woman, you know, getting respect from the community. So it, it changed. It changed to them. It's like, it thing doesn't have always to be that the woman keeps silent and let the man run the show. It seems like our women are totally capable and gain respect from what they are doing. So this young woman gain a lot of, I think, confidence. Why to the woman, the woman, the, we call the woman hero, they really don't care about, you know, getting recognition or not, as long as it's the business, like they get to do.
Oh, hello? Hello?
Do we lose Jung?
I think we... well, while we're waiting for her maybe to Skype back in, I'd love to hear some of your own thoughts or reflections about what the conversation around women and the way that, you know, her project is working in communities to make women more visible, but not in, you know, forced ways, or in, it's just kind of happening more organically. Is it, have you felt that the dynamics are similar in places in China?
And yes, I see many environmentalists are women. They just so, like, I see the feminine energy is so powerful that I need to cultivate more in myself. And for me to hear John talking about it with such a confidence and a high spirit, it's really, really inspiring to me.
Yeah, I think that you've also shared with me that you grew up in a rural area, a rural village in China. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you were sharing with that during a ride recently. And what was that experience like for you? And, you know, hearing about the work that is being done by Zhang, how is that, you've expressed that you've, you know, definitely feel inspired maybe to go back one day and feel more confident or empowered to work with the dynamics, the really challenging dynamics, family, society in China. But hearing about her, Xiang's journey, how does that make you feel, like, I guess, internally, and what are some of your thoughts and reflections?
Yeah, and as she mentioned about her deep trust in community and life itself, that really strikes me very strongly. And also, I see the strength in my mother, and she single-handedly supported our family since I was very young. So women can do it. It's just like we kind of rely on men. Like even when my mother did everything mostly, she still goes to my father to ask for advice, even though she could make all the decisions herself. So it's a mentality in women, especially in traditional women, still thinking like they are not really confident, even though they know they can do it. So through Zhang and her efforts in her community, it just opened up a whole new realm for me. That said, like, yes, we can. And to work with the men together, not just like, you know, we are women, they are men, to work together is the key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wanted to thank you, Xiao, for sharing your reflections. I also wanted to share a comment from Cynthia in Virginia. She says, thank you, Zhang and Awaken Call team, for this rich conversation. So much of it resonates with me. I am practicing deep listening. We'll need time to let the ideas and energy sink in, with a smile face. So I have no questions now. Just want to express my respect and gratitude. Namaste. Thank you, Cynthia, for sharing that comment.
Stella, this is me coming back. Sorry, I got out of the net and tried to come back again. I got out.
Thank you for rejoining us. I'd like to just express my gratitude to you for being with us so late at night over there, and just sharing with us your journey and your work. It's truly inspiring. And when you were dropped off for a little while, one of our callers was just expressing, you know, what happened in Paris and just the violence that's constantly happening around the world. And, you know, if only there were more people like you that were working to build relationships and starting with friendship first, before, you know, and letting that lead to projects organically, and how that's so powerful. And so I just applaud you for doing the work that you're doing and continuing to do it despite the challenges. And I'm sure so many doubts that may come up for you. And thank you. Xiao, I'm not sure if you wanted to share any closing thoughts, or and after that we could go into a moment of gratitude.
Yeah, I want to share my gratitude towards Zhang too. I think you planted so many wonderful seeds in so many hearts now. And it's like Arya said, it's so simple to just go out and make friends in the community, and then to see what small things we can do. Just that simple. And we can gradually change by working together. It's that simple. That's really gives me a lot of hope and trust in this universe. And thank you for that.
Thank you, everyone. We'll just have a moment of gratitude to take all of this and take it back out into the world, so that there's more kindness and friendship and love and less violence. And I wish everyone a beautiful Saturday, or a beautiful rest for those that are already very early Sunday morning. And until next time, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bella.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.